RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
It was only about a week ago that we chatted with Greg Simons at the Tariba University Associate Professor on Geopolitics. I had a feeling then that our conversations would become more frequent from that point on, only a week ago. And I wasn't wrong. And Greg, I think you've been thinking that probably as well. Nice to have you back. Okay.
Well, nice. Yeah.
Well, okay, maybe, wrong word.
Yeah, but understood. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, nice from the angle that it's good to get some, you know, some good commentary on this, because again, the reporting of what's been happening, especially in the last few days, is pretty thin on the ground here, and it's kind of one directional. Let me put it that way.
Oh yes, no. I mean, you wouldn't think it was, to use the terminology on when other countries do it, a full scale unprovoked invasion. This is different things, minor incursions, little raids, etc. You wouldn't think that 13 high-rise residential blocks would, in Beirut alone, were leveled last night, including the use of white phosphorus munitions, which is absolutely and utterly banned. And, yeah, I mean, and they wonder why people don't trust the mainstream Western media these days.
Yeah, I hear you. So the death of Hassan Nasrallah in that very targeted attack. So you wonder, where is the intel coming from back to the Israelis?
Well, the targeted attack, so to speak, and this is Israeli jargon for levelling everything in the area, because this included six residential blocks that were levelled together with him. Well, I think it comes down to this electronic spying again. This interception is the most likely. I mean, because this is something that they and the Americans have been doing for a while now, so this would be the most likely route, unless, of course, and Mossad do have a network of spies and informants, would be another potential avenue which they pinned him down.
And the call to strike, I have heard it reported, was made by Netanyahu from an office near the United Nations in New York. He wasn't even in Israel when the order came through from him.
I suspect that is no coincidence. If you were looking at this from a crisis communication point of view, you would say, well, what would be the safest way for me personally to distance myself if it went wrong, according to what they wanted? And then you'd be able to say, well, it was rogue elements, blah, 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 and I'm taking control. And, yeah, the usual BS about an investigation, blah, blah, blah. We will clear everyone, no matter what crimes have been committed. But on the other hand, if it does go well, you can still claim success and the credit for it. So that is my reading and an interpretation of why he waited until then.
BBC reported a few days ago, Iran's supreme leader saying the death of Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah will not go unavenged. What do you think that actually means?
It means that they will pay in kind, because, I mean, he was, of course, an important leader and a figurehead. But, I mean, on the other hand, I don't think the organisation is going to be destroyed as a result of it, because, I mean, this is fifth generational warfare we're talking about, not fourth generational, which has... Fourth generation has centralized command and control, like the Israeli military, whereas fifth generational warfare has a more flat hierarchy. So you don't have this pyramid shape, you have a more flat. So if one person gets taken out, the organization can still function. And, I mean, for example, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and the likes, I mean, They are still functioning no matter how many different heads of it that are taken out.
Also, there were reports that Lloyd Austin, the Defence Secretary, had a very heated exchange, presumably on the phone, on the hotline, with Gallant, the Defence Minister of Israel. Basically, it's been reported saying that the Israelis didn't inform the Americans that they were going to make this attack, which took out the Hezbollah leader. Yeah. And, you know, you look at the Biden administration and you wonder who is actually running it, who's in charge of it. That would be a perfect time to not tell anyone about what you're about to do, I would have thought.
Well, I mean, they don't care what the US thinks or does, because they know that no matter what they do, the US will continue to back them. And right. I mean, this has been proven. I mean, look back. This was even the case in the 60s. Look what happened when the USS Liberty. They strafed, bombed, killed US sailors, and still there was no war. I mean, you imagine any other country doing that to a US Navy ship. It would be a declaration of war. It was a declaration of war.
How does that work then? Why does it operate like that?
Well, I mean, the US political power has been compromised. I mean, you just look at these discussions about AIPAC and their influence in the US. I mean, there was that one U.S. senator who came out and, you know, made himself deeply unpopular and said, well, this is how it functions. They sponsor people and they buy their loyalty. So, I mean, the oldest profession functions well in the highest echelons of U.S. power.
So how do you think this is going to go for the Israelis? How is Hezbollah going to deal with it, and Lebanon going to deal with this? And will it bring in, because I've heard also, you know, the likes of Colonel McGregor and Scott Ritter talking about how tense it is in Jordan and in Egypt, where there are hundreds of millions of people possibly really threatening the leadership of those two countries.
Indeed, yeah.
You know, and when, if all this kind of lets go, what happens?
Well, it is letting go, and you can see that. I mean, okay, I mean, already I understood that Israel was going to go in to Lebanon. I mean, they took out Nasrallah. They had this exploding pagers and walkie-talkies and things like that. I mean, this was at command and control targets. And then you had the mass mobilization through order number 8. And then last night, we saw the Lebanese army retreating from the southern border. And I thought, okay, it's happening now. I mean, one must wonder why you have a Lebanese army in the first place if it's not going to defend its own sovereignty and retreat in face of the Israeli army. But that's another question. So coming back to Egypt and Jordan, well, I mean, Jordan, you can see they are very unhappy. The king of Jordan has made some quite terse comments because he knows it's utterly politically unsustainable for him. He will get his own little Arab Spring or whatever, and his head will be on a pike, which is why, I mean, you also had the foreign minister of Jordan get into quite a heated discussion in the UN as well. So, I mean, you can see these things are starting to fray, especially with Jordan. Yeah, Egypt, they are being a little bit more subtle about it, but I think the concerns are pretty parallel because, I mean, they've been walked all over the Philadelphia corridor and all of these other things adding up. The fact that Israel has said that it wants to drive Palestinians into Egypt, which would, of course, disrupt the domestic politics and social structure of the country. So you have a lot of pressure going on these leaders. And I mean, you can see, I think more so with Jordan publicly, that they're starting to try and distance themselves, because the distance between the leadership of these countries and the population is getting to a level which is actually dangerous for the continued rule.
It almost seems like, what do I know, but just a feeling you get that Israel is intent on, well, not poking the bear, that's Russia, but poking the Middle Eastern equivalent of the bear to the point where it does rain down an ultimate response. And I guess the US comes in, but it's not even clear if the US can fight this to any level anymore. It's like, I mean, it's almost biblical in its feel, like you're trying to push some prophecy to become real or something. Is there anything in that?
I mean, they keep on invoking the Zionists, who are not particularly religious, keep on invoking these kind of biblical or these, should we say, religious prophecies, most definitely. But I think the most interesting thing, which was one of those signals before the actual ground invasion, was the fact that the US quietly moved its troops out of Syria and Iraq. And they're thinking, okay, so why are you doing this? And of course, the answer is clear, because I don't think they're that enthusiastic to get involved in yet another war directly. I mean, indirectly, they're up to their eyeballs in two wars. And one can even say it's questionable whether it's indirectly at this stage as well. And, I mean, they take their troops out of there because it's a lightning rod. I mean, when the shit hits the fan, pardon the French.
Yep. No, well, you can use that, I think, in this case. Yep.
These guys are going to be among the first ones to die because there's what they refer to as the axis of resistance. So these different insurgent groups, these are the first ones they're going to target because they're a most obvious source of hatred and what is unjust in the region. So, I mean, it's a high priority target for them.
All right, let's move in the time we've got to Ukraine now. And the little short guy's been in New York, Zelensky, and he's got around the traps too. I think he's met Biden, he's met Kamala Harris, and he came out with Trump, which was a surprise.
A little bit awkward too, you look.
Yeah, no, it was awkward, and Trump sort of had him.
Yeah, like a pet. Yeah.
Yeah, like a pet. You remember Benny Hill? He used to have that short guy that he tapped on the head all the time. It kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, no, when comedy was funny, yeah.
That's right. But it seems that I've always thought from the look on Zelensky's face, he knows that the inevitable cornered rat is coming, and it's just a question of time. But he got around, and he came away with, I think, another $8 billion, but that goes to the military-industrial complex. It's not cash in hand,
exactly.
Necessarily. Mm. I don't think people realised, if we were to believe some of the commentators, but only a week and a half ago, we were pretty close to some kind of nuclear war.
Yes.
It was very on the edge, and the nuclear doctrine of Russia has been, looks like, about to be modified to respond with nukes to non-nuke attacks. So do you want to pick it up from there? And where is that whole thing now, do you think, given all that?
Well, I mean, the West was to be honest about what they were doing in Ukraine, then you cannot say that they're not involved directly, because these long-range missile strikes, these are not operated by Ukrainians, because to do that, they need to be highly trained how to operate these missile systems. And the second one, which I think is even a bigger problem, that they get access to NATO codes and important information systems which run those. Would you trust Ukrainian operators to do that? And I mean, the answer is clearly no, because if they did trust them, they wouldn't be giving them this clapped-out old equipment which they're about to retire. They'd be giving them the latest models, which they are not. So you can already see that Ukraine here is an object. It's not a subject of this event. So, I mean, they're being used. And, I mean, you've got the likes of Lindsey Graham and others saying, well, this is the best investment for our tax money. I mean, we're killing Russians, but no Americans are dying. And, I mean, they're saying it again and again. And, I mean, obviously, this Russia had enough, especially when it was a fait accompli, basically, that... what is it? Yeah, Starmer now. It's hard to keep up with the British PMs. It's like trying to keep track of those.
Well, he might not be there for too much longer, the way he's being talked about at the moment. Anyway.
No, but he went there, and it looked like that Biden and he were going to just right away and say, carte blanche, you can do whatever you like. But, of course, Russia knows that it's not Ukrainians doing it. It's done in their name, but with US or UK or German people pushing the buttons and putting in the necessary data and using the satellites, etc., to enable this. So finally they had enough. And, I mean, you had that rather direct. I mean, he's not known for being indirect, but very direct. A reply by Putin, who said actions will have consequences. And actually, for a change, they listened. And I mean, quite a few commentators have noted how sour Biden was during that meeting. So, I mean, he wanted to go ahead with it. I mean, it's just an insane little fantasy world that these clowns live on.
Why do the British push so hard? That's one thing I can't figure out, because they are well within range of being fried.
Yes.
You know, why would they take that risk?
There are a couple of things. I think, one, there has been a long history. I mean, even the fact that if we look back to the imperial times, I mean, you had bloodlineage, which was... with the Russian and the British imperial families, but you also had a high level of conflict and antagonism between them. I mean, hell, I mean, the British royal family didn't even offer refuge to the Romanovs to save their lives during the revolution. So you have this antagonism. You mean this great game and so forth, which is played out in different theatres throughout history. But there are a couple of other issues too. One of them relates to British mentality. I think they still think somehow that they're an empire. And you can see how they try to lecture the Chinese, who just show the middle finger pretty quickly to this inconsequential power and international relations. I think the final thing is it's a distraction in terms of domestic politics, because, I mean, the British government is so utterly detested, and rightly so, and it doesn't matter who you got in, blue Tories or red Tories, it's absolutely makes no difference for the average Brit, who is enduring all kinds of hardships financially, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they're undergoing some kind of authoritarian, Orwellian existence where you can get arrested for bad or naughty memes. I mean, if we look back, it was even going into sci-fi, like this Minority Report during the coronation, where they were doing pre-crime arrests. And this is not science fiction. This is fact. So they've got a lot of domestic discontent. And what was it? In Henry V, I think it was, where they talked about whenever they have problems, there is a foreign adventure to make to distract giddy minds, as
yes,
they called it.
Giddy minds, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they better be careful, the giddy minds, because they might find themselves in a very surprisingly tough and thermonuclear situation if they push it too hard. We don't want that.
I think that once more, I mean, the problem is that these people live in an echo chamber permanently. They don't listen to anyone who doesn't agree with them.
Right, okay.
And the filter bubbles make sure that nothing sensible gets through in sufficient quantity. It's this absolute detachment from reality while they're trying to stir up this kind of patriotism or nationalism, national pride. Look, we're standing up to the Russians. All of you might die, but I have my nuclear bunker somewhere. So,
Well, what did Putin say? He said, we'll be martyrs, but at least we'll get into heaven or something. I mean,
yes.
You know, or something like that. Okay, to finish up, want to touch on this. And it's amazing to think this, that one-third of nations globally are affected by U.S. economic sanctions, or, in other words, economic warfare. That's what it is,
yes,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
A third?
No, I mean, if you had a look, I mean, I think it's the State Department have a list of the sanctions. I think it's something like 1,200 pages long. So, and I mean, it's everyone. It doesn't matter, friend or foe. Sanctions. And I mean, they seem to be addicted by it. Excuse me. But it's also one of the least effective forms convincing a country. I mean, you look historically. When have sanctions worked? I mean, it's very few cases. I mean, if we look at economic warfare, the U.S. embargo on Imperial Japan, oil and those things, it was meant rhetorically, it was meant to limit the capability and capacity of the armed forces of Japan and China. But what it did, because it underestimates the strategic value in what they're doing, because they're looking at it from the outside, but they're not understanding from the inside how much value is attached to that. So Japan moved forward its ideas about going to war with the US, which it thought was inevitable anyway, and it just moved it forward. And, I mean, the same applies now. And, I mean, it's decimating Europe. I mean, Europe's undergoing deindustrialization. I mean, Germany's a joke. I mean, it's dead, essentially. And you can actually start to see the fray between the political elites, which are utterly beholden to US and US interests and German business interests, because they're in it to make money. They're not in it to have some kind of slave mentality for US geopolitical imperatives. And you can see that fray occurring. I mean, Germany was the industrial powerhouse of Europe, which kept Europe running. But now, I mean, and the US isn't backing down on anything it's doing. I think a little bit of additional pressure, because, I mean, the Russians were discussing the idea of imposing their own sanctions by embargoing the sale of critical raw materials to the West, and I think that is it's not going to help, because a lot of those raw materials which the West is still buying but not saying it can't be sourced elsewhere.
Mm. Yeah, that'll show up eventually, won't it?
Oh yes, there's a lot under that carpet at the moment. It's not much room for anything else.
And just to finish up, moves away from using the SWIFT system, and the US dollar is the reserve currency of the world. That depowers, that's a slippery slope for the United States as an imperial power in the end. Anyway, so they must see that that is coming, and there's a certain amount of writing on the wall there, isn't there?
But once more, it comes back to some of the comments I said earlier. I mean, they're so in this little bubble of their own that they cannot understand these things. And generally speaking, I mean, the people making the decisions are ignorant and illiterate in what they're doing. They don't have any idea. All they have is this memory of the US being the world's dominant power since, what one can even say, 1945, even if they did have the bipolar competition. And it's made them weak and it's made them arrogant. And it's not a good combination.
Been watching too many movies, Greg. Too many movies.
Yeah, but unfortunately, all of these fictions, non-fictions, have become fact. Yeah, well, because, I mean, if we look at Dr. Strangelove, I mean, you know, not so long ago you'd laugh at that. That's ridiculous.
that's like a documentary now.
Yeah, more or less. It's like, no, this is too close for comfort.
Yeah, and they're waiting for Iron Man to come and save them, or whatever those Marvel comic characters are, you know.
Oh, no. It's not good for the nerves.
Yeah. Hey, good to catch up again, Greg. I'm sure we'll be chatting again soon, because things will move pretty quick, won't they, now?
I suspect so. And, I mean, it's only the first day of Israel's invasion of Lebanon. And, I mean, if we remember back to 2006, it was all hunky-dory to begin with, but pretty quickly turned to tears. I suspect that this is not going to be much different, because Hezbollah is much more powerful now than they were back then. And I think Israel is actually much weaker than it was. And it doesn't have the political resolve because it was much more united before. And now you've got those, I mean, even if they don't disagree with what he's doing, they hate Netanyahu. And you have these guys from Shabat, from Mossad, from the military are openly saying, and I mean, this has never been seen before, that Netanyahu is doing this for himself. And he's putting Israel's future at risk. I mean, I've never heard that said before in the context of an ongoing war.
Yeah. Wow. All right, Greg Simons.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas.
From
great looking tees, hoodies, caps,
thank you,
tote bags,
again, Greg,
bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.